All right, Demos. Like, good evening. Good evening. All right. Well, you know what? I'm off for the challenge. All right, Demos. Tonight we are. It's wonderful to be back with everyone. Shkach Rabbi Richter for giving shir. So we are picking up tonight in Meretz Hashem on Chaf Ben Aleph 20A at the Two Dots. Really beautiful Gemara tonight. So 28, 3, 4 lines down from the top. Amalei Rav Papa LaAbaye. So Rav Papa said the following to Abaye. Maishna rishonim disrachish lehu nisa, umaishna anon delo misrachish lanisa. This is such a profound question. So Rav Papa says to Abaye, why is it that earlier generations were privileged to have miracles done for them, and we don't see miracles? I think many of us think about this all the time, right? Because certainly, again, we learn all about the miracles of yesteryear, right? The miracles of past generation. And often we think to ourselves, if only I could see a miracle like that, right? How much stronger my emunah would be. Just by the way, just one word about miracles. Miracles in a nutshell, don't work. Right? That's like the nutshell miracle. Meaning what? The greatest proof of this is you look at our ancestors in Egypt, right? In Egypt, and what happened? They saw miracle after miracle after miracle. They saw plagues. They saw a splitting of the sea. They saw Egypt decimated. They had man. Can you imagine, by the way? Can you imagine food falling at the doorstep for 3.5 million people every single day for 40 years? Forget about anything else. That by itself is dramatic. You would think they saw Har Sinai, they saw God, whatever that means. And yet again, at every single turn, ultimately again they were ready to snap at Moshe, ready to rebel against Kadosh Baruch Hu. What's the pshat? Because at the end of the day, miracles are like fireworks. You ever go to watch fireworks, right? So what happens when you're watching the fireworks? I was like, and then what happens when the fireworks are over? No one's ever like, you know what? That was the best fireworks show of my life. I'm really going to live differently going forward now. Like that really, that was a transformative event that opened my eyes to really the luminescent holiness and beauty of the universe. And I need to live more and be more. When it's over, it's over. And you get back in your car and whatever. You know, you go back home and resume your life. Miracles are like fireworks. So when they're happening, you ooh and you ah. But the truth is, a real theological growth and real spiritual growth and real connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't come through fireworks. It only comes through consistent hard work, through day in and day out. And that was the difference. You see, our ancestors, you want to know that at the end of the day, the challenge of Klal Yisrael, this is why we don't cover any ground. I realize that now, okay? And so the challenge of Klal Yisrael was, if you think about it, they went from 0 to 60 in like no time, right? They went from literally worshiping idolatry to seeing God at the Red Sea. And they didn't earn it. They didn't earn it. They didn't grow into it. It was just given to them. So it's kind of like the child who grows up with money. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the child grows up with money, he or she appreciates nothing, right? They appreciate nothing because everything is just taken for granted. Klal Yisrael, in a certain respect, in spirituality, we're spoon-fed spirituality. When you're spoon-fed spirituality, you don't have to work for it. Nothing really sticks, which is why no matter that they saw everything. They saw everything, any single time they encountered adversity, they fell apart. But nevertheless, miracles are still incredible. So our Papa asked Abaye a simple question. Why is it that earlier generations had miracles and we don't have miracles? Why is that? So listen to this. So the Gemara says, "Uvimishum tanuye." Now maybe you'll say, you know what? Maybe in earlier generations, they learned more Torah. They both say, now this is incredible. See, but the Gemara says, that's not true, actually. And I'll tell you why. Bishanid Rav Yehuda, right? Rav Yehuda lived earlier than Rav Papa, a couple of generations. In the years of Rav Yehuda, Kulei Tenoye Ben Nezikin Haba. In the times of Rav Yehuda, everyone was well-versed in the laws of Nezikin. What's Nezikin? Damages, tort law, Baba Kama, right? Bab Metzia, Baba Basra, Sanhedrin. They were well-versed in those areas of Halacha. But the truth is, but that was really it. That was their strong suit, and that was really it. Rav Papa says, Va'anan, Kaima, Masinon, Shisa, Sidri. We're proficient in all six orders of the Mishnah. Which Rav Papa says, it's fascinating, because what does it sound like? Now, what does it sound like? What is he saying? What is Rav Papa essentially saying? We learn more Torah than they did. We're more knowledgeable than they are. So it can't be Torah. Furthermore, v'chi hava mati Rabbi Yehuda bo'oktsin ha'isha shekoveshes yerek b'kedera v'amila zesim shekavsham b'tarfeyem tahorin amar havios deravushmo ha'kachazina hacha. Shabbos say furthermore, in the days of Rabbi Yehuda, right? In the old days, they would get to the sugya of Uktzin. Shabbos say here, we're not going to really delve into this topic, but these are laws dealing with ritual impurity and food. Right? What type of food, or really the stalks of food, can they contract tuma, not contract tuma? In the days of Rabbi Yehuda, in the old days, when they would get to these topics, they would say, these are complicated topics. Right? These are like things that Abaye and Rava, that Rav and Shmuel would deal with. Va'anan, meanwhile, Rav Papa says, but us, kamasninon be'uktzin tleisar misifta. We have 13 yeshivas that learn uktzin. 13 yeshivas on Uktzin. So both say, so just want to just understand the profundity of what it is that's unfolding over here. So right, so remember again, what's happening? Rav Papa is asking Abaye, why is it that earlier generations had miracles and we don't? So the almost like the reflexive answer always is, and this has to do in general with a way in which we kind of glorify the past. We always seem to think, like just like everybody thinks that like pre-war Europe was just so beautiful and so wonderful and such, like the heyday of Yiddishkeit, and we forget about, you know, pogroms, and we forget about, you know, mass ignorance and all different kinds of things like that. But we often think it's they must have learned more Torah. So mostly that's reflexive, right? They were holy, learned more Torah. And meanwhile, the Gemara is saying over here, no, actually, we learn more Torah now. In other words, Rav Papa is saying, in our generation, we learn more Torah than they learned. But yet, listen to this, V'ilu Rav Yehuda, ki avashalev chad masanai, asa mitra. Yet, listen to this. Rav Yehuda, when there was a drought, and they needed rain, as soon as he would take off one shoe. Now, why would he be taking off a shoe? He would start to take off his shoes as a sign of mourning for the lack of rainfall. Right? He wouldn't even get to take off both shoes. The moment he would take off one shoe as a sign of distress, asimitra, it would begin to rain. Incredible, it would begin to rain. Va'anan, Rav Papa says, Anan, kametzarinon nafshei, umetzavech katzavchinon, v'les demashkachbon. And Rav Papa says, meanwhile, we fast, we daven, we cry out. Sometimes we're answered, sometimes we're not answered. So first of all, it's just interesting to understand over here when he asks about miracles, what he's actually referring to, right? So in other words, he doesn't really mean miracles like the way we think about it, like the splitting of the sea. What he means is, why is it that earlier generations seem to have been more readily answered by God? Right? Rav Yehuda needed rain. He began to take off a shoe as a sign of distress. It started to rain. Us, we could daven, we could cry out, we could do all these things. Sometimes we get answers, sometimes we don't get. Why were they greater than us? So I'll say, the answer is actually quite shocking. So Amrlei, so Abai responds back to Rav Papa. Amrlei, Kamai, Hava Kamasri Nafshay Akidushas Hashem. Earlier generations, I will say, in Rav Yehuda's generation, earlier generations, they were willing to engage in self-sacrifice for the sake of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now the Gemara illustrates this with a story. Anan, Lo Masrinan Nafshin Akidushas Hashem. We are not willing to be Moser Nefesh. We are not willing to self-sacrifice for HaKadosh Baruch. So we'll see, even before we go on, a Gemara like this is like, it's like jaw-dropping. It's absolutely jaw-dropping that we often think that the metric of spiritual success is the amount of Torah that you learn. And that is simply not true. Learning Torah is a mitzvah. Learning Torah is beautiful. Learning Torah is life-altering. But the amount of Torah you learn is not necessarily the metric of spiritual success. So what is the metric of spiritual success? How much are you willing to sacrifice for your Yiddishkeit? How much are you willing to give up? You know, we'll say the word sacrifice is a very bad word, right? In our society, our goal is to not have to sacrifice anything. Not have to sacrifice anything. Right? The goal, what is it? Somebody once told me this. The goal is not to have your cake and eat it too. The goal is to have your cake, eat it too, and then have some more left over for later. Right? That's the goal. There should be no need to sacrifice anything. But I would say sacrifice is part of the human condition. Let me ask you this. If you're not sacrificing something, what does that mean? What does that mean? Comfortable. Can mean you're comfortable. Good. What else can it mean? Not trying hard. Think about it like this. If you're not sacrificing something, it means you're not making decisions, right? In other words, anytime you decide on something, right, you decided to come here. Yeah. You decided to come here, which means what? You made that decision. Therefore what? You sacrifice something. Nebuch, you sacrifice bedtime. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Shira thinks Shira goes until 10. You know, in other words, every time you make a decision, right? You decided to eat fleishiks tonight for dinner. So again, that means, okay, I gave up ice cream. What's interesting to note is, well, if you're not sacrificing, it means you're living in a world of pariv, which effectively means you're not making decisions. You're not living a decisive, growth-focused life. Otherwise, by definition, you'd be sacrificing something. So it's incredible. So comes along, the Prophet says, do you know why they were greater than us? Because they weren't scared to sacrifice. They weren't scared to sacrifice. They were just willing to go ahead and do whatever they had to do for the sake of the Ribono Shel Olam. And whatever they had to give up to be able to become the best version of themselves, they were willing to do that. I will say, is that not absolutely amazing? It's not about the amount of Torah. It's not even about the amount of tzedakah, right? It's about something so much more global that everything else falls in. Am I willing to give up things for my Yiddishkeit? Am I willing to make sacrifices for growth as a Jew? Rapapa says that Baye, that's the difference between them and us. They are willing to sacrifice. We're often very unwilling to sacrifice. Incredible. Now, the Gemara tells a story. And the story is a very peculiar illustration of this, but I think it's quite fascinating as well. Ki hadir Rav Adbar Ava, he gives an example of Rav Adbar Ava, who also was a contemporary of Rav Yehuda. Chaz yelahi kusis tahavas levisha karbalta. He saw kusis. Now, I will say, remember again, who are the kusim? The kusim are a group of people from a place called Kusa. Hence the name Kusim, right? They were resettled. Kusas outside of Eretz Yisrael. They were resettled in Eretz Yisrael by Shalmaneser, the king of Ashur, who went ahead and exiled the 10 tribes. He exiled the 10 tribes, and what he did is he brought another, it was a very smart chap. He understood people, conquered peoples, are much less likely to rebel if they're not living on their native soil, right? Keep a conquered nation in their homeland, and they will rebel. Displace them, and there's a much lesser probability of rebellion. So Shalmaneser took out the 10 tribes, and he brought in these people from Kusa in Eretz Yisrael. They were rampant idol worshippers. What happens is an outbreak of lions, which is not common in Eretz Yisrael, right? Outbreak of lions, and they converted. What was the problem? Easy smiling, easy nose. What was the problem? What? Was it a real conversion or not a real conversion? And this debate about the Kusim goes on and on, to the point the Gemara says, you know, the Kusim adopted some things, they didn't adopt other things. The things they adopted, what do Chazal say? Right? The things they adopted, they were excellent at. The things they didn't adopt, they didn't. People sometimes like, yeah, that sounds pretty good actually. That sounds like a good approach to Judaism, right? Adopt the good, I'll be good in certain things, and the other stuff maybe I'll just leave on the side. That was the Kusim. So Kusim are, so their Jewish identity is always in doubt. So the Gemara tells a story. Then what happens? Rav Adbar Ava sees this Kusi woman. Now we're going to see. He didn't know that she was a Kusi. Tahava levisha karbalta. She was wearing a karbalta. Now karbalta was like a cloak associated with royalty, and just had like a haughtiness or an arrogance associated with it. So what happens? Savar de Bas Yisrael, Rav Adbar Ava thought that this was a Jewish woman who was wearing it, and what did he do? Kam kare mine. He grabbed it from her. Now, again, I will say, to be clear, don't do this, right? You'll see what I think we're supposed to take from this, and it's not to mimic that behavior, right? Different times, different society, different people, not for us. So he went over to her and he grabbed the cloak. It turns out, only one problem. Igloi milsa dekusisi. What was the problem? The problem is the lady wasn't Jewish. So he had grabbed it because he thought it was a Jewish woman wearing an immodest article of clothing. So therefore he felt again that at the end of the day he had to take it, he had to remove it. Turned out she wasn't a Jewish woman, she was a kusis. So what ends up happening? Shaimua ba'arba me'azuzi. Interestingly enough, Rav Adbar Ava was fined. They fined him 400 zuz for his act. Right? You don't go grabbing stuff from people, right? So they fined him 400 zuz. Amrale mashmecha. So he said to the woman, "What is your name?" Amrale. She said to him, "Masun. My name is Masun." Amarla masun masun arba mea zuzi shavya. Masun masun, you cost me 400 zuz. Now it's a little bit of a play on words because her name is masun. The Hebrew word for 200 is ma'asun, masun with an aleph. So he said, masun masun, you know, 200, you cost me 400 zuz. So I'm going to say, it's such a strange illustration of what the Gemara tried to say before, right? In other words, it seems to be the Gemara was going so well until we brought down that story. And there's the story just seems like such a, like what are we supposed to take from it? So Rabbi says, so just follow the progression here. So remember again, what did the Gemara say? Rav Papa asks Abaye, why is it that earlier generations got miracles and we didn't get miracles? Bottom line answer, earlier generations were moser nefesh for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're not moser nefesh, showing it to self-sacrifice. The Gemara tells the story of Rav Ada Bar Abba. Rabbi say, what is the point of the story of Rav Ada Bar Abba? What was Rav Ada Bar Abba doing? What was he attempting to do? What? More than just a risk, he was taking an unequivocal stand for something that was right. Right? There are norms, there's modesty, there's the way the Jew conducts themselves, and then there's inappropriateness. He was taking a stand against that which he felt was wrong, and he wasn't equivocating on it. Or in other words, what wasn't he? He wasn't politically correct. In other words, what's fascinating, I think with the Gemara, and again, not to condone, the Gemara's not condoning the behavior. I think the Gemara is trying to give us an example that what does it mean to be Moser Nefesh for HaKadosh Baruch Hu? He will say, if you think about it, what's one of the greatest challenges we have in contemporary society? One of the greatest is the lines of truth and fiction are blurred. Right? In today's day and age, what's truth? What's truth? Well, it depends, right? You have your truth, I have my truth, right? In other words, and that if I identify the truth like this, then it's identified like that. You identify it like this, either. That's the fundamental decay of everything. In other words, there is a mandate to respect all people with all decisions and anything that they want to do. In other words, it's no good to ever pass judgment on anyone, to learn to accept everyone for who and what they are. But as a society, we also have to learn that you could be whoever you want to be, but you also can't alter certain unchangeable truths. Society only works if there's a true and a false, right? If there's a dark and a light, if there's good and there's evil. The moment you blur all of that, is the moment is just society. And this is what we are living through this. We are actually living through this. So the moment that you go ahead and you just blur all of that is, I don't know, I know this is probably the wrong thing to say, but you know, to me, one of the things that I just can't wrap my head around, and I'm trying to be such an accepting person, is when on the email signature lines, people put their pronouns. People put their pronouns, right? Right? I'm sorry? I actually, for the first time this week, I got a Shaila with a him, his thing, and that thing. I'm like, I'm not answering you. No, I'm sorry. But it's just a perfect thing. And it's actually done with like that this is serious. Like this, like that this is like, oh yeah, here's how I should be. Like, and no one sees it. And we buy it because you can't say anything, because if you say anything, you know, then again there's a whole bunch of other stuff. But understand what it does. These things, which, and a person might say, oh come on, who cares? It's innocuous. Maybe it is innocuous on a day to day level, but what it does absolutely do to the fabric of morality and the fabric of right and wrong, and then it obscures and blurs everything. Let's say, I know it's not the greatest societal issue, but it's something. The Gemara says, you want to know the difference between earlier generations and they're saying their generation is an earlier generation. There were no apologists for what was right. People don't always like being told what is right. People don't always like it when lines are drawn. People don't always like to know that not everything is okay or not every truth is actually true. But that's what you need in order to build a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's what you need in order to build a true society. And says, I will say, this is 1,000 years ago, I just want to point out, 1,000 years ago. So this is Rav Papa saying to Abaye, that's why they had miracles, because at the end of the day, they had complete moral, societal clarity. And because they had that, again, Rav Avda Bar Rava did, don't do that. Would not suggest it. I think it's a bad idea. Varai, the Gemara says, he was fined. It didn't work, don't do that. But at least it illustrates a mindset that there's right and there's wrong. And ultimately, where there's plenty of room for compromise, there is. As a society, we have to learn how to interact and accept all kinds of people. But on the core pillar truths of society, that there could be no compromise. Right, well, so I have to stop over here. I don't know. It could. I don't know what to say. It could be that if it was a Jewess, maybe she would have just been Makabel and would not have, pressed charges. The Kusas apparently pressed charges.
You're saying it wasn't just like, she came after him for damage. It was just
assessed
because he did something.
No, but Pasha, she sued him for something.
It wasn't Bezdin.
It wasn't Bezdin. Correct. Something. He was correct. She brought him to a non-Jewish court, so whatever it was.
Sacrifice that it was a monetary thing.
Yeah, absolutely. He was willing to give up his
sacrifice in this kid,
I would tell you even further.